Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everyone. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Tuesday, July 5th, 2011, episode 177, sponsored by Pfizer Animal Health. Good morning, Horse World.
Do you know what today is?
No, what?
Yeah!
What day is it? Tell me!
It's Tuesday!
I can't believe it! I just don't believe it!
It's like Tuesday. Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back. We're back live here this morning, Tuesday after the 4th of July, and we have a lot to talk about. Jennifer and I had a busy weekend, and I know, Jamie, that you did too. So it's just so much to go over in today's show. We're going to have some fun.
I hope that I can remember everything that happened, because I feel like it was just such a total blur, because I just absolutely enjoyed myself so much being in 68 degrees. It's like your brain
can actually function.
You can actually do things outside, and you can go outside and play, which we absolutely did. So it was an awesome weekend. For those who don't know, I got to go up to Seattle and visit my husband, who is currently deployed up there. He'll be back this Saturday, but it was just such a welcome respite.
Being well, I'll tell you what, too. I gotta say, I saw yesterday that Phoenix set a record with like 119 degrees, and I thought about you not being there going, yes.
Yeah, it's hell on earth here, actually. I'm not going to lie. I just walked outside. It is currently 6 o'clock in the morning here in Phoenix, and it's almost 100 already. So I'm pretty much wanting to kill myself at this point. So just know that my horses are miserable. We're miserable. Everybody's miserable.
And then Jamie's especially miserable, because I woke up this morning, and I actually got up a little late this morning, and I had this text that said, just got in. Flight was late. Call or text me at 5:15 a.m. to make sure I get up for the show. And that was at 4 o'clock a.m.
Yes. It was an exhausting evening. I was supposed to leave Seattle at, I think our flight was supposed to take off at 7:10. And at 9 o'clock, we pulled out of the gates. And it was... You know, you're on a plane, they lock you in there, and then they close the doors, and then they're like, you can't get off the plane, even though we had no pilot. No pilot at all. And they even came on the speaker and said, we would love to fly now. However, we have no pilot. There was a co-pilot, there was just no main pilot, and apparently they need two. To fly that thing. So they said, we've made the call in to find another pilot, because apparently the last one got delayed in the last city. So there's nobody to fly the plane. So you all are just going to have to sit here and wait. And lucky me, Glenn, I was
two
rows.
You had the fat guy?
No, I actually had some very lovely people next to me. However, I had the two-year-old. The very angry two-year-old that was two rows behind me. And we're sitting there, and his poor mother just could contain him no longer, because we sat on the runway sat at the gate with the doors closed for almost 2 hours. This child Well, while I'm in the back, because that's the kind of seats that I buy, are the ones in the way back, was running from the back of the plane, running down and up and down and up the aisle, not like screaming at the top of his lungs from point A all the way up to first class, and then he would be turned around and then he'd run all the way back. And his mother just had given up. Like, she had zero control of this child. And I'm sure that for parents everywhere, it is something that is understandable. For those of us that are childless, buckle that little son of a gun in. Lock him up. Screaming. And then we take off, and he screams and freaks out and cries the whole way because he's not allowed to run up and down the aisle anymore.
Hasn't she heard about Benadryl? Isn't that the mom's trick for airplanes is Benadryl?
You know, Glenn, I would have been the first volunteer to hand her some. I'm not going to lie. Oh, it was so exciting.
You know, I hate that whole sit on the plane thing for hours and hours. First of all, Jennifer's claustrophobic. She would break out the window. She would be opening the emergency door with the chute going out, and she'd be sliding down that sucker to get arrested at the bottom rather than sit in there for 3 hours.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah, you know what? I was about to that point. And I was thinking, you know, my window is over the wing, so I technically could break out the window and sidle
escape
down the wing. Yeah, it was just one of those, like, really frustrating things. And then the guy sitting directly behind me was a giant. And I'm not talking like a fat guy. It was like a really big guy who was crammed into this little seat. So, of course, his knees are pushing up against my seat the entire flight. I felt so bad that I didn't even recline my chair because I just looked at the guy and he was just pathetic. So, it was one of those, like, sit upright, read your book, do not talk to anybody, do not look around. And of course, my headphones from my iPod were broken, so I had to sit there and listen to this screaming child the entire time. So by the time I got back to the farm, it was almost 1 o'clock in the morning. And so that's when I texted you. I'm like, I need a wake-up call, my friend. I need a wake-up call because I'm going to be a little scattered.
Well, you know what the airlines call that, don't you?
What?
Birth control. Birth control. That's birth control.
And it was, too. And I was sitting next to a newly married couple as well. Like, they were young. And we're just like, do you have kids? They're like, no. I'm like, hey, me neither. Okay, we can be friends. We are united. We're all disgusted. But, yes, that's airline birth control. You are right.
Well, Jennifer, what do we got today?
On today's Pfizer Tuesday edition, we have double sarcasm, oceans of announcements, and host banter in bulk. We'll be starting out with the latest in a seemingly endless parade of reality shows, this time jousting. Yes, jousting. Then, after the requisite chit-chat and catching up with our Facebookers, we will be getting a live update from Horse and Country TV's Katie Gilmore, because, after all, it's Tuesday. She is at the test event for the London Olympics, and she's going to be live, so we might hear horses winning and chainsaws going. We'll see. And in conclusion, will there be heroism, tragedy, drama? Stay tuned. Find out in Black Beauty, Chapter 20.
Well, I've got a daily Winnie, and unfortunately, this one takes a serious tone. We all kind of know the drama associated with Boyd Martin, where he had the fire in his barn. He was renting a barn at Philip Dutton's place and caught it on fire, and he lost some horses. And it's just been ultimately tragic for Boyd. It's just been a really tough month. Well, Boyd's dad, Ross Martin, passed away this weekend. He was severely injured in a bicycling accident 2 weeks ago. He was hit by a truck during a bicycle race and just passed away from the injuries this weekend. He was a great guy. He always came to the horse trials and helped his son out. And he was actually an Olympic athlete himself. He was a cross-country skier in the 1968 Olympics. That's actually where he met Boyd's mom, who was an Olympic speed skater. And just tragedy could not unfold anymore. And just unbelievably heartbreaking for Boyd, who lost his dad, Ross Martin, over the weekend. So, you know, our condolences and thoughts and prayers go out to Boyd and his family. And it's just as what has been, I can't even imagine what he's going through right now. So fortunately, he did get to go to Australia, where his dad lives, and spend some time with him before he passed. So we are thinking about you, Boyd, and we are so unbelievably sorry.
Yeah, that was a tough one. I heard about the accident about a week ago, and Boyd really didn't want anybody talking about it. He didn't want it out in the public because just with everything that's been going on, he just didn't need it. And So then I saw that this weekend. So from all of us at the Horse Radio Network, we wish Boyd's family the best. All right, here we go. Mine. My daily win is a little bit cheerier, and it's from Larry. I think it's Pussy, isn't it? P-U-C-C-I, Pookie, Pussy? I don't know. Larry. Larry's from Colorado. He posted on our Facebook page, and he says, I have 11 horses, and I listen to you guys all the time. You're always talking about going here and there and everywhere. Man, I sure would like to know from you and your listeners how everybody handles taking care of your herd while you were gone. I don't have any kids in the neighborhood. So, Larry, that's a good question. First of all, please note, Jamie, another guy listener. Just note. Just wanted to say, I'll tell you, the guys rule this show. I need guy music. I need like some grunting or something, you know, that Tim Allen grunting every time we find out there's a new guy listener. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You appreciate that. Jennifer, so if you could make the question of the day about this, you know, what do you do? Please post on our Facebook page or even give us a call at 347-637-3238. When you go away, who takes care of your farm? Is it a friend? Is it a family member? Do you hire a service? You know, do they live there? Things like that. Now, what do you do when you go away? Because you have 5 horses, chickens. You have everything but cows, pretty much. So what do you do?
Well, yeah, it's difficult to find somebody who is going to take care of the place like you do. And while it's not possible to spoil the animals as much as I do have a guy. He is in the military, but he is currently on leave. He's kind of discharged right now because he has some medical problems. So he's unable to go serve his country right now overseas. He was about to be deployed to Afghanistan. And so he kind of has nothing to do right now. And it's been great for him to be able to farm sit. And it's been great for us because he's an animal lover big time. And he's actually, his name is Shane, and he comes over and he stays at the house and he stays with the dogs and he watches over the horses and takes care of the chickens. And I got to tell you that I just found out from him over the weekend that because of this coming in, staying at with the horses and staying at the farm, he's going to go back to school and get an equine management degree. So I'm really excited for him because he gets to go do that. And he's been kind of inspired and kind of fallen in love with the whole horse thing. He's not a horse guy at all. I mean, he's like a 23-year-old, you know, military guy who is just unable to to be in service right now. So he's going to go back to school. He's going to get his equine management degree. And I kind of feel somewhat responsible for throwing him, you know, in headfirst to the whole horse thing. I'm going to tell you, the first time he farm sat for us, I came home and I have the horses fly masks put on in the morning and they get fly sprayed. And then at night the fly masks come off and we check their eyes and make sure they're okay. Well, the first time I came home, my poor thoroughbred was wearing the pony's fly mask. It's like the poor guy couldn't hardly open his mouth. He's like standing there like, okay, I'm hungry. Can you take this stupid thing off of me? And then I come home and Shane has taken care of them and has shown an amazing interest in it. And all the horses looked great. all of them are, you know, had their fly masks taken off. They're all in good shape. So that's who takes care of my place. Fortunately, I'm going to hang on to him as long as I possibly can. What do you guys do as far
obviously
your horse is at a boarding facility.
Yeah, well, when we had our big farm, big boarding stable that we ran with 20-some horses, the problem is, too, that you have, Larry, is you have 11 horses. It's much easier to find somebody to take care of two than it is 11. Especially if they're being brought in and out every day. If they're turnout horses, it's not as bad. But then you sort of want to have somebody, too, that knows what the heck they're looking at and knows what, you know, when can recognize a foundering horse, can recognize a colicky horse, can recognize a horse with an injury, you know, that actually looks at them. So it's tough. It's not easy. Now, I know there's a lot of services, but he's in Colorado. He might be pretty rural. My sister-in-law actually does that down in Florida. She's a farm sitter. And she's an experienced horsewoman and knows what she's doing. So sometimes if you can find a good one of those that's insured and legitimate, that works out. But it's tough. We always had our working students. We always had students that were taking lessons with Jennifer. We always had like 15 teenagers around. So we used to, with the older ones, they used to take care of the place when we were gone. And they had some interesting experiences when we were gone, like blizzards and, you know, different things they had to deal with that power out for a week, and, you know, and running out of food and couldn't get to them on the roads because it was a big blizzard. We were in Florida in the sun. So, you know, they had some trials and tribulations, too. It's a tough question, especially with horses. It's a little different than finding somebody to take care of your dog, you know?
Absolutely. You can't just go to a, you know, worst things worse, that you just take your dog to a boarding facility and drop them off, go to PetSmart, you know. Yeah, you can't do that with horses. So when we are gone and the dogs are involved, we have somebody stay here. When I'm gone, like just for an evening, like I'll be this weekend, I'll just have one of my students come over and feed because it's only, you know, once or twice. Rebecca does that for us. So it definitely, there's different tiers of farm sitters and responsibilities that you have to do, but finding somebody that you trust is just the utmost importance. You know what I mean?
Yep, that's true. And it is tough. So Jennifer is going to post that as our question of the day. Larry, thank you so much for letting us know that you're listening there in Colorado, and check out our Facebook page to see what answers pop in there, and we hope that maybe somebody can help Larry out a little bit. I have another Daily Whinny.
Okay.
My second Daily Whinny goes out to Sterling Grayburn, my driving instructor from Gala Driving Center over in Georgetown, Kentucky. I went and took my first driving lesson yesterday. And
no
I had a blast. Well, you know, I've told everybody that knows, that's listened to the shows over the years, knows that I'm a driver and I like driving a lot more than riding. And Jennifer's finally encouraged me to go learn how to do it right. I've been driving horses now probably for 20 years, not so much in the last couple of years when we were moving around a little bit. But I've never learned to do it right. We kind of figured it out on our own. We figured out how to put the harness on our own. You know, I learned how to drive by myself, and it was about time to go learn to do it right. So I took my first driving lesson yesterday. We did some, and it was so funny because Wendy, Sterling's girlfriend, fiance, was over here the other day, who's been on our show, the one that helped you out with your dog, Dr. Ying, and she was over visiting, and I said, you know, I want to do this driving lesson, and I said, you know, I've always wanted to own a Dale's pony, which are little black cute ponies, and they could be gray, too, out of England, and they're very expensive, by the way, and she said, we have a Dale's pony in our lesson program. And I said, no, you don't. And they did. So I actually got to drive a Dale's pony on my first lesson, which is kind of like a dream come true right there. Sweetest thing named Rosie, and fat as a house. Fat as a house. Apparently it's been turned out and not been used in the driving program until the last week or so. So poor Rosie. We gave Rosie a workout, and she was pretty pooped by the end of it. She must be about 100 pounds overweight. I posted pictures. If you go to our Facebook page, I posted pictures of the drive and pictures of me standing there with Rosie. And I just love this pony, Jamie. She's the coolest, most forgiving pony, because let me tell you, I probably confused the hell out of her a few times. you know what's hardest for me? When I, all those years of driving, and I drove a Hackney and an Amish pony, we called her, and a couple Amish ponies, and, you know, I've driven some horses over the years. And I never used the whip because I didn't have to. So the whip always stayed in the whip holder. Well, when you learn how to drive right, you have to learn how to have the whip in your hand in addition to the reins and everything else. That's the part that really got me the most was the whip. I think I probably smacked Sterling in the face a couple times. but that's the toughest part. So learning how to do it right was kind of fun, actually, and there was a lot more to it than I thought there was when I learned to do it. So I'm very excited about my driving lessons.
That's so great. You know, I really think in the world of horses, you just never learn enough. You can never learn enough. I don't care how good you are. When you go out to Rolex and you see these guys in the four-star event, who do they have with them? A coach. You always have a coach. You always are learning more. You always have to have somebody on the ground helping you. And that is so, I am so proud of you for going out and taking some driving lessons. I mean, from what it sounds like your experience has been, you kind of got thrust into it and you just made it happen. So the fact that 20 years later you're starting to take lessons is just such a cool thing, and I think it's great of you to do it. And that pony is so stinking cute. Oh,
yes,
my gosh,
cute.
It looks like a little mini Frisian.
She does. She actually is cute. She has feathers and everything. The Dale's ponies are really neat. I don't know. Did we do a show, Jennifer, on Dale's ponies yet? Well, if we haven't, we'll have to do that. I can't keep track of all the breeds we've talked about. But Jennifer was looking around at ones for sale, and she said they started about $10,000 and go up from there. So Dale's ponies are expensive little beasts. I said to Sterling and Wendy as I was leaving Gala, which is actually a beautiful facility, as I was leaving Gala yesterday, I said, you know, these driving lessons are going to cost me a lot of money. So...
And then because you want a horse?
Yeah, by the time you buy a carriage, a horse, a harness, it gets expensive. And then, you know, I wanted to say, too, that we did a lot of other stuff over the weekend, and I know that you have some things to talk about, too, but one of the things that we're going to talk about with you a little later in the show is you went to see Buck, didn't you?
I did.
Don't give it away. You're going to do your review a little later in the show. You have to stay tuned for that. I want to hear. I'm sure the audience is anxious to hear how you felt about it. And I know that probably others saw it over the weekend because we had some people posting they were going. So maybe we can get somebody to call in and talk about it. But you weren't here on Friday.
You know, Glenn, I'm going to be honest with you. There's days when you wake up and you do the show and you might not be 100%. You might not be totally into it. Or, you know, you take a vacation day and you're like, oh, thank God I'm not at work. I'm mad at you. I'm so mad at you.
Well,
this
if anybody...
This is supposed to be a day, Glenn, that I go to... I go on a trip. It's 117 freaking degrees here. And I'm up in the Pacific Northwest. And... our windows are open in our room. We have, you know, the 60-degree temperatures are wafting in, and it's just so peaceful and so beautiful. And then I get a text, and it's Glenn. We had Buck on today's show! Are you freaking kidding me? I take one day off, and you get Buck Brannaman on the show? Good God, I was so mad. And I'm like, oh, my God, Chuck. Oh, my God. He's like, I'm so sorry I made you come up here and miss that.
Chad can't win.
I know. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe we got Buck Brannaman. And so, of course, he had to take me to the movie. And then that just started it all over again. Oh, my God, I can't believe I couldn't talk to that guy and he's not in our show.
I got to tell you, Jamie, you know how many shows I've done on this network and how many famous, very famous people, horse people I've talked to. You know, it's almost 1,300 episodes now. And, you know, I've talked to the biggest of the big. I was a little starstruck, and I think it was partly because we were supposed to have the director on Friday's show. If anybody missed it, go back to last Friday's show and take a listen. That was the first, July the 1st show. Yeah, you have to take a listen to it. But it caught me off guard because we were supposed to have the director, I think her name's Cindy, on the show. She's going to come on this week, by the way, this Friday. And we were supposed to have her on the show. Well, she was stuck on a train going to New York City and didn't have reception. So Jennifer is, by the way, Jennifer deserves all the kudos for that. She's making phone call after phone call to the office over there, to the production company, and they're going, what did they say to you, Jennifer? They finally said,
I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was Pam. Thank you, Pam. Well, we can't get Cindy because she's stuck on a train and there's no reception there. Would Buck be a would Buck be an acceptable substitute?
No,
we don't want Buck.
We want him next week when my esteemed co-host is back in town. So never mind. That would have been the right answer, Jennifer. What the hell?
So we get Buck on, and the first thing I say to him is, "How does it feel to be back up to the producer of the movie?" And he said, he had a clever answer. He's a very funny guy, as you learned in the movie there.
Yeah, he is.
He had a very
something along the lines of, "I don't think she'll be subbing for me."
For me, yeah. I was starstruck, and that has never happened to me before. So, and I think it was partly because I just didn't have time to prepare. You know, it was just caught off guard for him coming on.
That's that kind of interview that I know we don't usually write down interview questions, but that's the kind of interview you just don't want to screw up so bad that you have an outline of things you want to talk about. I totally know how you feel. Like, is Buck in it? No, because I'm not ready for this. It's not a suitable replacement.
He was such a good
And Jennifer was, Jennifer will help us out sometimes behind the scenes because she listens to the show as the producer, and we all chat on a chat behind the scenes so we can tell what's going on and who's coming up next and everything. And Jennifer usually provides us with questions when she can tell we're running out of questions or we're just fading. And I wrote to her and I said, "Jennifer, do you have any questions?" Because I knew I was fading and I just didn't know what else to ask. And she wrote back, "No, I'm starstruck." And it was like, oh, that really helped.
Thanks, producer.
Thanks, Jennifer.
You can always count on me to seize up in a pinch. But we did come up with a good question.
We did come up with some good questions. We talked to him about what coffee he drinks. You know, I thought that was appropriate for our show.
It is. You would ask Buck Brannaman about his coffee. But you know what? It is a big part of the movie, so I think it was good. But, I want to play it, actually, on this week. I want to replay that because I want to listen to it with you. And I want to critique your interview, Glenn.
Okay.
I want to grade
we'll do that.
Your Buck interview, and we'll see how I feel because I want to listen to it with you. And I want to take the role of the boss. I want to take the role of, you get the biggest interview of your life. We call that the big get, okay? So you get the big get, and I want to hear it with you, and then afterwards I will critique it.
All right, we'll do that this week. That sounds like fun. We'll do that this week.
Okay.
it might not
be fun for you. I'm going to be a boss. I'm going to be a real radio station boss and be like, what the hell were you thinking?
Or you might come back and say, oh, that was great.
Yeah, I could dream on because I'm kind of mad that I didn't get to be a part of it. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, and then what else on Friday you missed? Poor Reese Coffler-Stanfield comes on again doing a Cooking with Reese segment with a vegetarian dish for you, and you're not here.
Which, by the way, is one of my favorite dishes of all time.
Really?
And I am, gazpacho soup, holy cow. So I'm reading my little Facebook. I'm in, 50-degree temperatures, loving life, and I'm bundled up like a dang snowman, and I'm looking through my iPhone, and I'm like, and they did gazpacho? Are you kidding me? I missed the last two segments with Reese. I just think you do that on purpose. And so, so I'm doubly mad at you. So we might just replay the whole show on Friday. What the hell?
Hey, I got to cut. I feel like I'm dominating here, but we had such a fun weekend. I got to tell you a little bit about Glory, our new greyhound we got.
Puppy.
Yeah, we got Glory on Saturday. And I'll tell you what, we have been so impressed by this greyhound. Most of the time when you get greyhounds, when they're directly off the track, they really know nothing because they aren't trained in anything. They live in a crate 23 hours a day. They go train or they go race, and then they're back in the crate for the other 23 hours a day. And then they all go out and they feed together in these big troughs and stuff. So they're not handled a whole lot, and they just don't know anything. They just don't know anything. You just have to teach them everything from steps to going through doors to stepping on grass. Our greyhound, the last one we got her, she wouldn't walk on grass. She didn't know what it was. So there was, you know, there's all these things. Well, this particular greyhound we got, Glory, on Saturday, had been in a foster home for 6 months. So she went through all that. She threw all that stuff. And
aww.
So we picked her up. We went to the Bluegrass Barkery, which is a little pet store here in town, and it's also a bakery for dog stuff. They make dog cakes and dog cookies and wonderful-looking stuff, by the way, and apparently wonderful-tasting because Glory loved her peanut butter cookie. And it was there. They had a meet and greet there with 20 greyhounds in this little tiny store. And it's the only place you can go where you get 20 dogs in a store in this little tiny store all together, and there's no barking at all. You just no barking at all. greyhounds just don't bark. So that was kind of cool. So we actually then we went over to the dog park and we let her run around a little bit, and then we picked her up from the dog park and brought her home. And unfortunately, we found out Saturday night, well, let me preface this by saying Kentucky changed the fireworks laws this year and allowed frickin' everybody to buy full-size fireworks. I mean, big fireworks that you see bursting in the sky. So we've had 3 nights of sounding like World War III around here. You could walk out our back porch at any time over the last 3 nights, and you saw fireworks in every direction. Full fireworks. In every direction, everywhere. It did sound like a battle going on. Well, we found out that Glory does not like gunshot sounds or loud bangs.
Aww.
And she was a mess. And last night it was so bad. There were so many going off last night that she actually burrowed her way into the back of our walk-in closet in the bedroom and hid in the back corner. She just could not get far enough away from the world last night. So she was kind of a mess with that. But otherwise, over the weekend, we took her out to see a carriage drive, by the way, which I posted some pictures of on our Facebook page. We went to a carriage drive over the weekend at the horse park. Beautiful turnouts and rigs that we saw there. Just beautiful. And we took her along to that. She was a star. We took her to a picnic last night. She just hung out. She's really taken to us already. Somebody went to take her away to pet her a little bit at the picnic last night, and she turned around, looked at us, and gave us that look like, you're not leaving me too, are you? So she came back and sat right down beside me. So she's made herself at home. She's sound asleep. We wore her out this weekend. She's sound asleep right now. She loves her crate. She goes right in her crate. Greyhounds love crates because that's what they live in. It's their comfort zone. But so we're glad that the 4th of July should be over, and hopefully there won't be any more fireworks tonight for our dog's benefit.
Well, and that's another great question of the day is, you know, how do you handle the fireworks thing? Because I do not know an animal that is not scared of fireworks. Where my basset hound, someday I'll tell the story of how I got her, but she was shot, actually. So the whole gunshot thing just scares the dickens out of her. And unfortunately, she went blind and not deaf. So she's 15 years old and is still scared of fireworks, completely blind and has no idea where she's hiding, but can hear everything. And then my little border collie, you would think she'd been shot. My God, she trembles and shakes and is just so scared. But we used to live in a neighborhood. Now we live in the country, and so it hasn't been that big of a problem. But your neighborhood, I mean, you live in a neighborhood where the houses are on top of each other, and there's probably 10 bazillion kids lighting little poppers and everything. And,
I'm telling you, that's not what this was. This because they can sell these full-size fireworks now. So really, they're the fireworks that go way up in the air and burst and do the little things. You can buy those and shoot them off in your backyard now.
Good Lord, I still have a scar from my brother doing, hey, y'all, watch this. I'm going to light this firework. And he was upside down, and it just shot down. Nobody has any business having these ridiculous fireworks.
I just agree. And there must have been 100 firework stands in this town. It was just incredible. But there is a solution, apparently, and we've heard about – I thought it was a joke. And then over the weekend, we've heard about this from several people who use it, and they say it works, and I'm going to give them a plug right now, and it's called Thunder Shirt. It's the Thunder Shirt. It's a coat-like thing. It's a shirt that you put on your dogs that are scared of loud noises, of thunderstorms, of fireworks, things like that, and apparently it solves the problem. They just don't even notice them. I don't know what the theory is behind this. They have videos and stuff on their website. It's at thundershirt.com. And I think we're going to look into one for Glory They have them at the pet stores around here in Lexington, but we've actually talked to people that have used them, and they say it's a miracle. Your dogs just don't even notice the noise anymore. So when there's a thunderstorm coming, you just put on this coat thing, this shirt on your dog, and that's it. They just don't have a problem.
Well, you know what I did hear, Glenn, is that the reason I read this book on dog psychology, and the reason that dogs really get upset during thunderstorms is the static electricity changes. So what could be is that this completely grounds them and makes the static electricity null and void.
Well,
science.
You know, that could be part of it, but I think the other part, it has something to do with the pressure on their belly. Because it wraps around their bellies and it puts pressure on their bellies. I don't know. Maybe Jennifer read more about it than I did. But, it apparently works. We're going to look into it. So I'll give you a review and let you know because that could be something you could do for your doggie. And the $38, it's not like it's expensive either. If it works, it's worth $38. So we're going to give it a try. Thunder shirt. All right.
Well,
let's do our ad of the day, and then we're going to come back from that. And we're going to talk a little bit about jousting.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for Pfizer Animal Health for being our sponsor today. At Pfizer Animal Health, they're passionate about the health and wellness of horses and all animals. And their expanded equine product portfolio includes their trusted Strongid C2X, West Nile Innovator, the Innovator family of vaccines, Solitude IGR, and Zylexis. Pfizer strives to make life better for horses and the people who care for them. So you can protect your horse against upper respiratory disease such as equine influenza virus, equine herpes virus, trans 1 and 4. And from the Ford Dodge vaccine line, Pfizer Animal Health offers Flu-Vac Innovator, adjuvanted with medicine technology for an improved immune response. For more information on Pfizer Animal Health's products, visit them at PfizerAnimalHealth.com. That's P-F-I-Z-E-R, AnimalHealth.com.
Remember last week, Janie, we had that story about the new reality show coming up called Full Metal Jousting, and they were casting for it right now, and they're looking for horse people. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah, you volunteered me, and I said the only way that I would joust is if I could knock Alan from the Western radio show on his butt off his horse. Yeah, I remember that.
Because
he said he Facebooked me back and said, challenge accepted.
Well, you guys will get a chance because you can still apply to be a Full Metal Jouster in this TV show. Well, Chris from the Eventing Radio Show, our host over there, had a chance to catch up with the casting director. His name is Semi Aboud, and he is from Pilgrim Films. And Pilgrim Films has put out some big shows, apparently been very popular on the History Channel, called Pop Shot and The Ultimate Fighter. And they're a good production company that puts out these shows that apparently make a lot of money for the History Channel. And now they're putting out one called Full Metal Jousting. And I'm going to play for you. I want to play for you the interview that she did with this casting director for this show, because I think we have so many guys that listen to our show, and this is open to both men and women. But, you know, if you're a He-Man kind of guy or a He-Man kind of woman, then take a listen to this, because you're going to have to be. So this is Chris from the Eventing Radio Show.
Well, we're going to hear now from the casting director for the production company who's handling the brand-new reality series for Jousting, a reality knockout competition. Well, hope not literally knockout competition in jousting, but I thought it might be of interest to some event riders around the country, because all you need to be able to do is ride well and be brave enough to participate in this reality show where you could, you could actually win quite a nice amount of money if you got through to the finals. So let's hear more about this casting call. Semi Aboud is the Director for Talent Development and Casting at Pilgrim Farms and Television out in California, and he is involved with the new production for the History Channel called Full Metal Jousting. That sounds pretty dangerous to me, Semi. you're going to be looking for skilled riders, first of all, we should say.
Absolutely. It can be dangerous if not done correctly. It's part of the fun of the show. It's why it's called Full Metal Jousting. But done well, you can become our first Full Metal Jouster. You can become a very healthy and wealthy champion.
Well, wealthy, as you say, there's a reality TV show for the History Channel, and there's a chance to win $100,000 then. If if you get, if you become the champion jouster. Tell us a little bit about how you're going to devise this program and what the time frame is.
Well, the show Full Metal Jousting, the idea is we're going to take jousting back to sort of the raw competitions of 13th and 14th century jousting. Jousting exists today in many formats all over the world. You see it a lot in Renaissance fairs, and there's a lot of pageantry to it. We're still going to keep a lot of that, but I think the fun for us, you know, we're also the producers of The Ultimate Fighter on Spike. The fun for us is seeing the raw energy of this competition. And we're going to have a series of challenges based around testing agility, horsemanship, hand-eye coordination, just very basic things that involve horses and that don't involve horses. And then at the end of every episode, there will be a face-off. There will be a jousting challenge between two competitors. Each episode, someone gets eliminated until there's only one left standing.
The first thing we should say, the criteria here, Semi, is that they must be at least 21 years of age, a proficient rider, and a resident or citizen of the U.S. And when does that casting start and when does it close?
Well, casting starts right now, and we're accepting submissions through July 20th, so that's about a month. But, of course, the sooner you apply, the better. You know, if you're one of those people who apply at the last minute, then we have to go through hundreds and hundreds of people on the last day, and it makes it very difficult to get to you. But yeah, it's very important that we're looking for skilled riders. And you don't need to be a champion show jumper. You don't need to be the rodeo king. We're looking for people who know how to ride horses and do it well. Because unfortunately, we don't have time to teach our competitors how to ride a horse. We have time to teach you how to joust. You don't have to have jousting experience. You have to be interested in it. You have to be passionate about competition, and you have to want to win the competition. Those are the big things.
Now, you described it in your promotional material to be a, they need to be a skilled horseback rider and have the heart of a warrior. So what does it
Yes.
take to make a good jouster?
What does it take to make a good jouster? Well, you know, when I was talking to my casting staff about the kinds of people we're looking for, we're looking for tough guys who ride horses, just that general.
Well, we should say it's open to girls and boys, right?
Yes, tough folks who ride horses. And you have to be tough. I mean, you don't need to be an ultimate fighter. You don't need to be G.I. Joe to do this. I think we all know from riding horses, it takes all body sizes and types. But it's a full contact sport. It really is. And you have to be willing to take a punch, and you have to be willing to give one. And you have to enjoy the thrill of it all.
And you're going to kit them out in, as you say, full metal, so the full 200 pounds of armor and a war horse underneath them. Do you know what kind of horses they're going to be riding at this time, Sammy?
I do. You know, first of all, we put in the outreach there that it was 200 pounds of armor. You know, that may be a bit of an exaggeration. We're really trying to get to people, telling people how extreme this is going to be. The armor may be quite a bit less than that. In the 13th century, armor was around 70 pounds. In the Victorian era, it was closer to 200. The types of horses we're using, from what I've been told, we're using different draft breeds, such as Percherons, Shires, Belgians, and Clydes. They're primarily Percherons, and I have to admit, I am not a horse person all the way through, so I am learning. I know most of the horses are around 17 to 18 hands and weigh in range from 1,800 to 2,000 pounds, so that gives you a good idea.
So tell us the process then, if people want to apply, and we will, of course, put links on our websites to the website where they can go and sign up and apply for to actually be screened. Now, tell us about the time frame for this then, Semi, what the process is for anyone who's interested.
The best way to apply for the show is to email us at fullmetaljousting@gmail.com. You can send us your name, your phone number, a recent photo, and a brief description of why you think you can be history's full metal jouster. This is for the History Channel. We also do a show for them called Top Shot. They excel at doing these history-specific competitions. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then a producer will review it. And if they get around to it, they'll give you a call back, and they'll talk you through the whole process, and then you'll take it from there through July 20th. The last day for submission.
Now, what is at the applicant's expense, and what then becomes an expenses paid trip to actually the filming and the numbers, the number of people you're looking for here. You've got a number of competitors in mind that will be eliminated in the process down to the final two. So how many will you start with?
What we're going to do is we're going to fly 50 people out to Los Angeles for the semifinals. The semifinals are going to be between like August 21st and August 26th. And we'll do some testing there. We'll meet the producers, kind of a getting to know you week. Based on that, we're going to whittle it down to around 30 people for finals, and that'll be about 3 weeks later. We'll fly folks out. And once again, this is all on the company. It doesn't cost you anything to fly out. We put you up in a hotel, so no cost to you. And then for the production, if you make it through finals, we're going to choose 16 people to begin filming around October 13th through November 14th. And it's going to be kind of typical for a show like this. We'll have 16 people living in a house together, living in a ranch together near the location. And you really get to know your competitors. It really is a fascinating experience.
Well, you probably can't tell us where you're going to be filming at this point, but I think just so people get a sense of where they'll be located for that period, if they do get through to that stage, that it'll be somewhere in the west of the country.
I can't even say that. I mean, for semifinals, it's definitely in Los Angeles. The finals and the production will occur on the location, and it could be anywhere in the country. It will be in the U.S., though, I can tell you that much.
Okay. And then when will this show air?
Let me think. It's probably going to be the spring of next year. I don't have an actual date for air yet, but I think they're looking at the spring.
All right. Well, we'll put a link on our website, as I said, and as Semi points out there, that if you are interested, you can email them at fullmetaljousting@gmail.com. Well, good luck with that, Semi, and have fun with it. It sounds like a great production. Jousting is pretty exciting at the best of times. So, but I think by the time you've trained these good riders up, you'll have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I just want to wrap this up by saying we're looking for all kinds of horse riders, whether you're a pleasure rider, you're Western style, English, you're a racer, you're a show jumper, you're a barrel racer, or you're a bronc rider, rodeo, it doesn't matter. Try out for the show. You'll have a chance at $100,000. It'll be really, really exciting.
Very exciting and a nice tempting prize there. Thank you very much and good luck with it, Semi.
All right. Thank you very much.
FullMetalJousting@gmail.com. I am typing this in right now. I have written a brief bio on my co-host, Glenn.
Oh,
I am
there
sending
you go.
A headshot.
Can I do it in a carriage? Can I do it in a carriage? If I can do it in a carriage, I'll be okay. Because I learned how to hold the whip. A lance can't be that much different, right?
I mean, you're so interested in learning and moving forward with your equestrian career, Glenn, that I think that this is the logical next step. You get one driving lesson, you learn how to hold the whip, you can learn how to hold the joust. All right, so deadline to apply, July 20th, full metal jousting.
I think Robert Dunn. I'm voting for Robert Dunn. What do you think? A dressage guy should be able to ride a joust, and whack each other with swords and stuff.
Yeah, no comment. my name is Glenn the Geek. I live in Lexington, Kentucky. You're going to get a call back, buddy. That's actually pretty cool. That'll be great, and that'll be fun to watch, too. And obviously, Denny Chapman, who we've had on the show several times, was a part of Top Shot. And I've actually watched that show now, none of the ones with him in it, because I didn't know about it back then, but the recent ones, and it's actually interesting, too. So the History Channel is kind of right up there with our must-watch shows. And so
I tell you, History Channel's been doing a great job with producing shows. They have some great shows now. It used to be the History Channel, the joke was it was Hitler all the time. Hitler morning, Hitler afternoon, Hitler evening, and that's all it was. But now they have some of the best shows on TV now. They're really stepping up. All right, speaking of shows, it's time to get your buck review before we run out of time. So if you want, by the way, if any of the listeners saw Buck over the weekend, give us a call at 347-637-3238. We'd like to know how you felt about the movie. 347-637-3238. All right, I'm sure the listeners are anxious to know what you thought. Did you like it as much as we did?
Glenn, I hated it. I thought it was horrible. I can't even say that. Glenn, this movie was fantastic. And I'll tell you why. There's so many different parts of different avenues of humanity that you get to see in a movie like this. You get to see Buck with the horses. You get to see Buck in a dynamic with his wife, a man who travels, you know, 9 months out of the year, and the relationship that he has with his wife. You get to see the relationship that he has with one of his daughters on screen. You get to see the relationship that a daughter has with her father, who travels a lot. You get to, I mean, and then you get to see the relationship that he has with crazy horsewomen. I mean, and not so crazy horsewomen, but even some of his friends that he grew up with. And the story of, like, his buddy talking about when Buck was removed from his father when he was young. And to see a grown man cry telling a story about how horrible the abuse was that this man and his brother Smokey suffered at the hands of their father, and to watch him get emotional about that, I mean, that's definitely a part that choked me up. I didn't cry as much as I thought I would because of that one freaking woman in this movie. There's one person in this movie who will make you so mad. And when I say at the end of the show, spay, neuter, and geld your horses, this is the exact freaking reason why. This crazy woman, I'm not going to go into it. When you see this movie, and I want to find that woman, and I want to get her on the air, because I have got to talk to her, because I want to read her the riot act, because she actually kind of ruined the movie in a way for me, because I got so mad at people, at her and people like her that are completely irresponsible horse owners.
Yeah, but you got to admit though, they really did throw her under the bus in the movie. She has now been thrown under the bus in front of a lot of people around the world thanks to this movie. Uh-huh. I can't believe she agreed to even be in the movie, because she ends up looking like a complete idiot.
Well, the thing is, Glenn, they make you sign those agreements before. You know, they go, whatever you're doing, it's going to be on TV. And so she had no choice. I mean, she acted, her true colors came out, and the way that she lives her life came out. And you know what? God love him, Buck called her on it. I mean,
yeah, but
he was,
you know,
like,
what was interesting? If you think about that scene, I want to ruin it for everybody who hasn't seen it, but if you think about that scene, when he called her on it, in the movie, it was edited and done in such a way that it really, you know, it really wasn't a half an hour of him berating her. It left you to draw your own conclusions about the whole thing, but it really got the point across in a very subtle way. It's interesting.
And I think that's the beauty of his personality, is he's not the kind of guy who's going to yell at you for 20 minutes and tell you what an idiot you are. He's the kind of, like, when you were in school and you screwed up an assignment and your teacher didn't yell at you, they just turned and looked at you and they said, you've disappointed me.
Yeah.
And you feel like you got a knife to the chest, you know. That's exactly what he did to this woman, and that's his cowboy grace came out. And then when he had to explain to the other people at the clinic what had happened the next day, he explained it with a dignity and a grace. And in this, that scene that we're talking about, I, you know, you kept waiting for something to go, okay, well, you're filming a movie right now. Obviously, you're going to save it. And he didn't, because it for the reasons that he explained. And I thought
And that's why I'm so glad they didn't Disney-fy it, where he did save it. And I actually, when you listened to my interview with Buck, we talked about that. And he said they spent a lot of time discussing what to do about that. And by the way, did you jump out of your seat at that one scene?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but you know what? Chad and I watched it together. We're in Tacoma, Washington. We found a theater that was playing it. We drive up the hill. And during that, as that whole thing happened, all I could go was, this ain't going well. It's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you just watch. This is going to be bad. Because the whole thing was a train wreck coming. And I'm glad you talked to him about that. That'll be part of my grading process tomorrow to see how you handled it this week. But that's You're right. They didn't, and I remember you saying that now, they did not Disney-fy it and tie everything up into a happy little bow.
Nope.
And it handled it. And that woman, everything that happened is her fault. Everything that happened is her fault. She is a irresponsible horse owner. I mean, she is what makes, you know, gives horsewomen a bad name. And so I was so mad at her in the entire movie, and
well,
he handled it so well, and he handled the whole entire movie well. And it really gives you, if you're a horse person, it gives you such a great view of clinicians and that kind of life. It's almost like a rock star lifestyle. You know, you go, you try to remember everybody's name, you sit and talk with them, and then you get in the bus and you go to the next city. And it was, that part was definitely interesting. I want to do a clinic with him so bad I can hardly stand it.
Well, apparently he's coming here to Lexington in October. And it's open now. It's like $600, I think, to get your horse in a clinic with him. He's doing a couple of more advanced clinics here, not colt starting. So he's going to be over here. But I want to hear now, you brought your non-horse, learning to be horse husband to the movie. What did he think?
You know, he actually walked out of there like that was, and he said to me, that was an amazing movie, and what an amazing guy. You know, he said that he learned so much by watching that movie, and just the way that he handles horses and the way that he handles, you know, all the different people that are involved in the horse world in these clinics, and it was really, he loved it. He actually probably liked it more than I did, simply because I was so mad at that woman when I left the movie. I wanted to kill her. Like, I hate you. You are the reason that horse people have abandoned. You are irresponsible. Don't your freaking horses, woman. I was so mad that she had done this thing to this horse and created the outcome that he was like, it's okay, you know. But he totally agreed with me. But I feel like he really appreciated the movie. And, you know, so many times guys go to see a horse movie and they're like, oh, whatever. This is definitely a guy movie. This is, it's a girl movie too, a horsewoman's movie, but it is definitely a guy movie in the way that he reaches such a human level. So, you know, again, I give it 4.5. Just like I give it the exact score Jennifer did for the exact same reason. I give it a 4.5 out of 5 flakes, simply because of the freaking Winnies that they put in there. My God! I told you, so, I was like, honey, when
so
you,
it wasn't
when
just
you
us.
Horse,
you did discover some fake Winnies in there. It wasn't just us.
You know, I want to say that I would have heard them without Jennifer telling me, but the whole thing was, she was in my head. She was in my head. It was like, oh, that was a fake Winnie. I'm like, horses don't whinny when they're just standing there. They whinny for food. They whinny for buddies. But so, yeah, there was a couple of moments where there was like a like little fake whinnies here and there. I would have had to talk to him about that. I hope he did. Did you?
No, we didn't talk to him about the fake whinnies. I figured asking about his coffee preferences was enough. No.
But Jen,
so,
you were so right. I totally heard you in my head, like, oh, there's fake Winnies. Oh, and I mean, it started right at the beginning, like, boom, fake Winnie. Boom, fake Winnie. I don't know why Hollywood feels the need to make horsey noises all the time, but they totally do.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you liked it. That's good. And I'm glad to hear Chad liked it as well. We do want to go see it again here this week before it heads out of the theaters. And, boy, go see it in the theater, too. Don't you agree? The cinematography was terrific.
It is just absolutely gorgeous. It
and that's what I want to talk
beautiful
to the producer about, Cindy. About, is it Cindy, Jennifer, the producer?
Yes.
I want to talk to Cindy about that. I think she's coming on this Friday. I want to talk to her about the cinematography and things. And the other question I have for her is, when you start out, this was a documentary. So when you're going out doing a documentary, you really don't know what you're going to get before you head out. So I assume you have to just do miles of footage. And then you're picking it out and editing it after. I really want to ask her about the process, because, you know, the whole middle part with the woman you hated is what really gave the movie some soul. And, you know, but they didn't know they were going to get that before they started. So I have a lot of questions for her from the producing end of things, too. So it'll be interesting. You are here this Friday to talk to her, right? I'm just checking because I don't want to get in trouble again.
Dear God, I'm going to be now. I mean, good Lord.
All right, we got to get to our song. We have our guest coming up live from the Venting Test event over in London. So this is the Venting Test event that they do for the Olympics, and they get the grounds ready, and they test it out, make sure that the volunteers are all working right, and the judges and the stewards and everybody's doing the right thing. They test the grounds, see if they have to make any changes before the Olympics. And Katie Gilmore from Horse and Country TV is supposed to be there and checking in with us shortly. So we'll get to her. I did want to mention that we've had a couple Facebook posts and answer. We had one about the Thunder shirt from Tanya Klepper, who says, have one for my black and tan coonhound. It works really well. So we'll have to give that a try. Also heard from Dr. Wendy Ying, who I talked about earlier in the show, who was over there when I got my lesson yesterday. And she's listening this morning, and she said, sent me a text that said, I'm filling out my app for Full Metal Jousting now. They can't turn me down. I'm a double minority pick, meaning woman and Chinese. So I think she thinks. Now, Wendy's about your height and, you know, and probably 200 pounds of armor would just send her toppling over the side of the horse. But Wendy is also tough, so she could probably do this. Go for it, Wendy. Sign up. Because
awesome.
Because apparently I've been signed up, so if I'm going, you have to go. This song today is brought to you by Pocket Stable. How do you keep track of your horse's information, like farrier visits and shots? Do you have a full box of receipts, post-it notes? Maybe, or perhaps you just don't keep track at all, which is the way most people do it, and you just guess when your farrier or vet is due to come out? Well, the solution to this problem is right on your iPhone, and it's called Pocket Stable. It keeps your horse's information in one easy-to-get place, including vaccines, wormings, farrier and dentist visits, and even the weight of your horse. You can find it in your App Store, on the App Store on your iPhone, or you can also use your iPod Touch, and this works on your iPod Touch as well. So go to the App Store there on your iPhone or visit them at pocketstable.com. I thought, you know, all this talk of horses and of, you know, jousting and things, that I thought, you know, what would be appropriate for today? And, you know, there's going to be some girls out there in Full Metal Joust. I'm sure they're going to pick a really pretty girl out there that everybody's going to root for. So I thought, you know, a little Templeton Thompson Cowgirl Creed. So if you have that Cowgirl Creed, you want to sign up for Full Metal Jousting today.
She said, I can do that. It wouldn't take nothing but a whole lot of heart, iron will, and gumption. I'll just use what the good Lord gave me. So don't call me honey, and don't call me baby. Don't call me baby. I ride high in the saddle, always saddle my own horse, till I'm every inch a lady, from the outside to the core. Cowgirl Creed.
And that is Templeton Thompson, Cowgirl Creed. And we do have our next guest on the line, Katie Gilmore from horseandcountry.tv, the place to go to see any equestrian video, get all the latest news, all that kind of stuff. Definitely check that out, horseandcountry.tv. But Katie is actually calling us. This is so cool. I love the fact that we can do this. She's calling us from London. She's calling us from London, the Olympic test event going on there. And Katie, first of all, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, you know what? We're doing great. We're doing great. And, you know, how are you, first of all?
We are bang in the middle of the Olympic test event. So we're pretty frantic, pretty frazzled. Very excited indeed, much more excited than we expected to be. It's proving to be an amazing, amazing event and an amazing venue.
So paint us a picture. First of all, tell everybody a little bit about the test event and why it is there, and then we'll get into kind of what's going on.
Okay. Well, as you know, obviously, London is hosting the Olympics next year, and for all the sports, there are test events being held in the various areas. And this is the Olympic Equestrian Test Event. It's been run as a CIC two-star competition as well. And 40 riders from 23 countries have been invited to take part in this. So they can bring their horses over and get a good look at the venue, have a go with some of the facilities. The whole event is hosted in Greenwich Park, which is one of the beautiful old London parks. And I have to say, there were a lot of doubts about the venue. There have been protests about the venue. But, you know, boy, were the Olympic Committee right. The venue is fantastic. It's absolutely spectacular. We walked the cross-country course earlier with Team GB. And from fence five today, it looks like you're jumping into the city of London. It looks like you're heading for Canary Wharf and you're going to jump into the Thames. It really is something else. It's really spectacular.
Wow. So back up a little bit. Why were there protests on this location?
I think it wouldn't be British without having a few protests, to be honest. It's something we like to do. It's a very old park, and the locals were concerned that the park would be ruined or changed permanently because of the event. Actually, their fears are very much unfounded. All of the structures are temporary, even to the point that the stables and the surface is raised so that it can be taken up and removed, and the park will be as it was. If anything, the park is going to be improved by having the games here. Just even for the test event, the committee has done an astonishing job. The stabling looks excellent. The surface in the arena is fantastic. The cross-country fences all look good. And all we're hearing from riders is that they're very, very happy.
So this is not following the schedule of a normal event. They've only held, I think yesterday was the dressage?
That's right. It was the dressage for the CIC 2-star. Today was the cross-country. And tomorrow there's show jumping.
Okay, so first of all, I think yesterday Piggy French from Great Britain was in first place with Clayton Fredericks from Australia in second place. I think the highest placed American rider was Will Faudry at 15. So tell us a little bit about how the dressage went and what I guess you're going to be. Is the cross country over?
The cross country has just finished. We're just waiting for the results to come down to confirm them. The press conference is just underway at the moment. It's looking good. Piggy French's round was unbelievable. She, I think, was one of the only riders that came back inside the time. It's a fast track, and all the riders said it. I mean, the terrain here is very, very undulating, and there's some very steep bits, and all of the riders have come back saying they're going to need a fast horse next year. They're going to need a fit, fast horse that can handle the hills.
Wow. So she went clean and under time. Tell me how everybody else did. You know, give us a kind of overview. After dressage yesterday, obviously she had a fantastic score of 34.7. Clayton was behind her in second place with a 40.9. And then they were all very tight after that with Michael Young at 41.4. Sarah Olstart Ostholt, sorry, it was 41.6. So there's a lot of 41s and 44s, all kind of very tight in there without having a rail in between them. So with the cross country, did much change?
A little bit has changed, second and third. But if you visit our website at horseandcountry.tv, you can watch our videos, which have the rider reactions on them. So, you know, we're standing there with our iPad 2 and a microphone, and we've been talking to them as they finish their dressage and as they finish their cross country. So you can hear straight from the horse's mouth how everything rode and how they think they're doing, how their horses are going.
You are such a tease.
I got to tell you.
I
got to tell you, I have goosebumps because I'm thinking back now because I had the fortunate opportunity to go to all the test events for the World Equestrian Games here in Lexington. It's making me a bit nostalgic and making me want to be at a park in London. What a beautiful, what a great place to be doing it. It sort of reminds me a little bit of the Adelaide in Australia there, where it's done in the middle of a city. How cool is that?
It is. It's absolutely fantastic. And if you watch some of the videos from this morning, we've been very lucky because we've been able to catch up with most of the leading riders. And, you know, yesterday we met the dressage team. We had a good old chat with Carl Hester and some of the others so that we could, talk to them about their plans, talk about their horses, and find out how they were going in their preparation. Today we were actually with Team GB for the eventing guys, so we were with Mary King, Mary King is just a goddess, you know, after what she did at Kentucky. It was amazing. Some of the others. And we were able to walk the cross country course and get a good look at the views. And, you know, I've got to tell you, some of those fences, if I was a horse, I wouldn't be concentrating. I'd be looking at the views. It's stunning. It really is.
Has anything like this
online on our website.
Well, I'm definitely going to check those out because I want to see what it looks like. But has anything like this ever been done in London?
No, not certainly not in one of the parks. There was a lot of feeling that maybe we should be holding the equestrian sports at Badminton or at Windsor or, you know, one of the established venues. But never, this has never been done in a London park. And you do find yourself thinking, why on earth not? It's the capital of the country. It's easy to get to. And the scenery is just spectacular. You know, you'll see, if you watch the Mary King and some of the interviews that we shot this morning, you'll be able to see we're standing by a cross-country fence and the backdrop of London is beautiful. It's a beautiful day today as well. So, we're very happy and the riders are all very happy as well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So with cross country today, obviously show jumping will be tomorrow. Do you have any predictions on who's going to win this thing?
Well, we would obviously like Piggy to win. Piggy has been having an exceptional year. She's a fantastic rider and possibly one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Unfortunately, her horse did lose a shoe while he was going cross country, so hopefully he's going to be found tomorrow morning. There's the riders' trot up at about 8:30 tomorrow morning, so we're hoping that'll all be okay. But ideally, yeah, I'd like to see Piggy in there, and it's also nice to see Clayton doing so well. Clayton is, you know, a good friend of Horse and Country, and we always enjoy seeing him and speaking to him. So it'd be nice to see him up there too.
Absolutely. Well, so this test event, is it a USEA, like, eventing sanctioned event, or does this count for points, or does this just kind of count for everybody getting to go to London and ride the competition?
No, it is a CIC 2 star, so it is run under international rules. Points-wise, I believe it would count for the particular horses, but, you know, the horses that are here are 2-star horses. They're you know, I suppose some may get to the Olympics, but I doubt they'll be ready. They're young horses that are getting a bit of experience here, more than anything else.
Well, I think it's a great thing. We will definitely check out horseandcountry.tv because now I definitely have to see these jumps. And so definitely check out the Mary King interview. I'm sure Clayton's on there too. And we just appreciate you coming on and telling us about it, and we'll probably have to talk more about it next week too.
I'm sure, once we've had a bit of time to absorb what's been going on and get over the heat stroke that we're all getting.
Katie, I got to tell you, I'm jealous. I am jealous. I have to admit.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to be honest.
It's a great experience being here.
Well, I'm so glad that we can get the view from you and the listeners around the world can hear, you know, you paint a good picture, and I want to check out the videos just to see the scenery and the jumps and what they've done with the park there. So cool that they really had, you know, you talk about doing it at an established venue. Well, then you sort of have established jumps, and they change them around a little bit, but it's a track that everybody's used to. Here, they could start from scratch and really create something unique, and that's going to be unique for the riders the first time they ride on it. So that's cool.
That's right. I mean, fundamentally, this is the Olympic Games we're talking about. You know, why would you put it somewhere where we already go and we already watch competitors? You know, we're used to seeing riders going around Abington. We're used to seeing riders going around Burley or Windsor. But, you know, at Greenwich Park, that's unique. And the Olympics is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for most people to go and see some of the best sport in the world. So, you know, I think they're absolutely right to look at a venue that hasn't been used before and is a little bit different.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you, Katie. We appreciate you being on with us, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week and hear all about the results.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Katie.
All right.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, I know what I'm going to do with my afternoon. I got to go watch all of this stuff.
Well, you know, it's going to be 120 degrees, you know. You might as well just sit in and watch videos in the air conditioning because that's about all you're going to be able to do.
Trust me, that and a nap are in store for me today, my friend.
Do you have enough energy to read Black Beauty today, or should we skip it?
You are not getting out of this today, my friend.
Yeah, people have had to wait 4 days for their reading. They probably forgot what happened.
Well, I'll recap you a little bit. Remember that Black Beauty saved the day two chapters ago, and he ran and got the doctor, saved his mistress's life because the doctor's horses were not fresh. And so while John had to gallop 8 miles out there, then the doctor galloped him 8 miles back, and he was going to be fine. But Joe Green, the young new groom who's not 15 years old yet, did not take proper care of him, let him drink cold water, didn't put his cooler on him. So Black Beauty got very, very sick. And we left last time with they were giving him medicine and he drifted off to a peaceful sleep.
Okay, you ready?
Okay.
This is a dramatic reading by Jamie Jennings of the English classic Black Beauty by Anna Sewell.
Chapter 20, Joe Green. Joe Green went on very well. He learned quickly and was so attentive and careful that John began to trust him in many things. But as I have said, he was small for his age, and it was seldom that he was allowed to exercise either Ginger or me. But it so happened one morning that John was out with Justice in the luggage cart, and the master wanted a note to be taken immediately to a gentleman's house about 3 miles distant, and sent his orders for Joe to saddle me and take it, adding the caution he was to ride carefully. The note was delivered, and we were quietly returning till we came to the brick field. Here we saw a cart heavily laden with bricks. The wheels had stuck fast in the stiff mud of some deep ruts, and the carter was shouting and flogging the two horses unmercifully. Joe pulled up. It was a sad sight. There were two horses straining and struggling with all their might to drag the cart out, but they could not move it. The sweat streamed from their legs and their flanks. Their sides heaved and every muscle was strained, whilst the man, fiercely pulling at the head of the forehorse, swore and lashed most brutally. "Hold hard," said Joe. "Don't go flogging the horses like that. The wheels are so stuck that they cannot move the cart." The man took no heed but went on lashing. "Stop, pray stop," said Joe. "I'll help you lighten the cart. They can't move it now." "Mind your business, you impudent young rascal, and I'll mind mine." The man was in a towering passion and the worse for drink and laid on the whip again. Joe turned my head, and at the next moment we were going a round gallop towards the house of the master brickmaker. I cannot say if John would have approved of our pace, but Joe and I were both of one mind and so angry that we could not have gone slower. The house stood close by the roadside. Joe knocked at the door and shouted, "Hello, is Mr. Clay home?" The door was opened and Mr. Clay himself came out. "Hello, young man, you seem in a hurry. Any orders from the squire this morning?" "No, Mr. Clay, but there's a fellow in your brickyard flogging two horses to death. I told him to stop and he wouldn't. I said I'd help him lighten his cart and he wouldn't, so I've come to tell you. Pray, sir, go." Joe's voice shook with excitement. "Thank you, my lad," said the man, running in for his hat, then pausing for a moment. "Will you give evidence of what you saw if I should bring the fellow up before a magistrate?" "That I will," said Joe, "and glad too." The man was gone and we were on our way home at a smart trot. "Why, what's the matter with you, Joe? You look angry all over," said John as the boy flung himself from the saddle. "I am angry, Oliver, I can tell you," said the boy, and then in hurried, excited words he told all that had happened. Joe was usually such a quiet, gentle little fellow that it was wonderful to see him so roused. "Right, Joe, you did right, my boy, whether the fellow gets a summons or not. Many folk would have ridden by and said 'twas not their business to interfere. Now I say that with cruelty and oppression, it is everybody's business to interfere when they see it. You did right, my boy." Joe was quite calm by this time and proud that John approved of him, and he cleaned out my feet and rubbed me down with a firmer hand than usual. They were going home for dinner when the footman came down to the stable to say that Joe was wanted directly in Master's private room. There was a man brought up for ill-using horses, and Joe's evidence was wanted. The boy flushed up to his forehead and his eyes sparkled. "They shall have it," said he. "Pull yourself a bit straight," said John. Joe gave a pull to his necktie and a twitch at his jacket and was off in a moment. Our master, being one of the county magistrates, cases were often brought to him to settle or say what should be done. In the stable, we heard no more for some time as it was the men's dinner hour. But when Joe came in next to the stable, he was in high spirits. He gave me a good-natured slap and said, "We won't see such things done, will we, old fellow?" We heard afterwards that he had given his evidence so clearly, and the horses were in such an exhausted state, bearing marks of such brutal usage, that the carter was committed to take trial and might possibly be sentenced 2 or 3 months in prison. It was wonderful what a change had come over Joe. John laughed and said he had grown an inch taller in that week, and I believe he had. He was just as kind and gentle as before, but there was more purpose and determination in all that he did, as if he had jumped at once from a boy into a man. Up next tomorrow, Chapter 21, The Parting. I'm going to tell you that I would like to say goodbye to the happy part of the story.
This was the happy part?
This was all the happy life of Black Beauty. Tomorrow, the parting. They part ways. It's very sad.
I got another text from Wendy that said, "I had to mute the Black Beauty part. I don't want to have nightmares tonight." So
it was good today. It was a happy story, Wendy. Jeez. Now, I'm just going to tell you that you're going to want to tune out for the next, let's see, 20 chapters or so.
All right. So that wasn't Joe Young. Joe's a young guy, right?
Joe is. He's about 15 years old.
Well, there's other youngsters that are doing a good thing, and they're in Oregon, and they're part of a competition that has started. And, you know, when I first read this, I have to admit that I was a little concerned and thought that it was a really bad thing. But then the more I read about it, I kind of think it's okay. It's called Teens and Oregon Mustangs.org. It's a group of teens. It's a competition where they take Mustangs right off the land management facilities, and they train them up, and they have a contest. So it's sort of like they do with the adults there with the Colt starting, but they don't actually ride
makeover.
Them. Yeah, it's that Mustang makeover kind of thing, only for teens. The trainers have to be 12 to 18 years old, and there's about 20 of them. And they have geldings and fillies from the Bureau of Land Management. But they don't ride them. See, I had a mixed feelings about this because I'm thinking, you know, should a 14-year-old really be training a Mustang? That was my first concern. Mm-hmm. But they actually are training them for showmanship, body conditioning, and in hand. So they're not riding them. and that made me feel a little bit better. And they're actually doing it also to raise money for the Mustang Rescue. So they're doing it for a really good cause. And, you know, I give them kudos for trying to do something to help the Mustangs. And you know what? The kids might learn something along the way. Those that don't end up with broken legs and arms will probably learn. And even those that end up with broken legs and arms will probably learn something along the way. So it's teens and OregonMustangs.org. But you do have to give them credit for thinking outside the box and trying to come up with something that will help raise awareness.
I got to say that I think this is fantastic. It's a learning process for the kids. They're learning to have compassion for the Mustangs. They're learning to fall in love with them. And they're also, you know, the horses are going to be better for it, too. You know, there's so many homeless Mustangs out there and that have been rounded up by the BLM and everything, that this is a great program for them to go ahead and do. So we do appreciate them doing it. And we'll definitely have to catch up with them and somebody from the competition, because this is just a cool idea.
Yeah, I think so, too. So maybe, Jennifer, we can keep an eye on it and see what happens after. Maybe talk to the winner. That'd be kind of cool, too. Have a chat with the winner. Well,
they're yearlings. The horses are yearlings, too, so that's cool.
Yep. Well, we've run out of time, Jamie, believe it or not. We've talked for an hour and a half this morning, and we're playing just out of time. We have so much to talk about. I didn't even get to it all. So I have to continue tomorrow. Now, we'll see. We'll have to look at the schedule here and see when we could possibly do the critique of my interview of Buck, where you ripped me a new one. We'll have to see what we can do about that and take a look at the schedule and see where we can fit that in. So
Abby V. Equine commented right before I did Black Beauty, he wrote, previously on Black Beauty, ... And if you've ever seen the TV show Lost, that's how they started every episode, previously on Lost. Sorry. I like that. That was great.
All right. Well, thank you. It's good to talk to you again. I missed you over the weekend and on Friday, and we'll be continuing our shows. We have live shows all this week, so stay tuned. I think also on Thursday of this week, we get an update from Norco. We haven't checked in with the city of Norco lately there in California. So
yeah,
we'll check in. Yeah,
Horse Town in California, we'll have to check in with them. And plus, bring on the Buck interview, my friend.
All right. Thank you, Jamie. Everybody, you can check out all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. Chris's show, if you want to hear the rest of the Eventing Radio show that we took that excerpt from today. Thank you, Chris, by the way. You can hear that at horseradionetwork.com as well. The other thing is I wanted to make that this month we have two very exciting announcements, one for you next week from the Horse Radio Network and one at the end of the month that we think you're going to like. Some new things happening here, and you'll hear it first on Horses in the Morning next week.
If you missed the live show, recorded versions are on our website, affiliate websites, iTunes. You don't have to miss one. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. I'm super excited to talk to you a little bit more about this whole exciting adventure of your past weekend with your new puppy dog. Say goodbye, Glenn.
Goodbye, everybody. Wear your helmets. Have fun.